Welcome to the Tiny Plastic People Podcast, the podcast about tiny plastic people. We paint with them, we play with them, and we want to tell you why we think that's great. So, I'm joined today by JD.
Hello.
By Rogue Michael.
Hello. Should this be called Mid-Morning Miniatures? You look very Partridgian.
I'm afraid that's genetic, and I cannot help
it. I'm terribly sorry. Carry on.
And aha, the swordfish.
Hello.
And I'm Pete, aka Fienya, from Discord. So I guess the first things first, which is what have we been hobbying? Tom, do you want to start with that?
Sure, I can take us away with that one. I've mostly been doing stuff for the Heresy since that came out.
I think this will be a bit of a theme with at least three of us.
Yes. Yeah, quite possibly. So I have been painting Imperial Fists. Still, I feel like that's my answer a lot of times when I get asked what I've done on the podcast. I did a Cardasaur as well.
Nice little dino break.
Just for break, yeah. And managed to get in some games of Heresy as well, which was
fun. Awesome.
I am really enjoying the new rules.
How did you find the games, like, in terms of like differences from Heresy 1?
There's some stuff to get used to. There's in particular, I think the lethality has shot up a bit with
things like breaching
reactions.
As well.
Yeah, the reactions giving you a whole extra shoot. Overwatch now being a full normal shooting phase. It's definitely, I want to come back to it and make a judgment on how well I think it works after I stop being a fucking idiot about it and getting myself shot, falling for the most obvious traps possible, because they're traps that I could do as well. So when I've stopped doing that, maybe I'll feel differently about it. But I really do like it so far.
Yeah, it definitely feels a bit more interactive, which I think can only be a good thing. In terms of not just sort of sitting on your hands for a whole half of any given gaming experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Michael, how are you hobbying?
I have. I felt compelled.
Victory.
Yeah, I felt compelled to answer that I have before, you know, supposing to say how it's been going. It's not a given. I'm talking to someone last couple of days and they're like, oh yeah, after painting like 100 models in 2 days, they're like, oh, I get really burnt out and don't paint for like a month. It's like, that's barely a pause. I'd not notice. But yeah.
That's just an intake of breath.
At the last rum row, I played some Necromunda. I used one of Axo's gangs, the Orlocks, and had good fun with that. Was like, I definitely want to be able to join in these in future. And then the squats came out, the Ironhead squats, and they're really fun. I really like the Votan as well, but I'm not getting a 40k army. That's just not feasible, not happening. But the squats, that's manageable, like 6 to 10 models.
Yeah, 10 guys, 10 little guys.
I threatened to not be able to get even that pitiful project across the line, and I think the only reason I did manage to get my squats moving again is the fact that I bought another game and couldn't really justify it. I mean, I could have just about justified it to myself, but explaining it to Alex, my wife, is absolutely fine with me hobbying and stuff, but when I've said, oh, I'm picking these up, they're a quick gang, I'll paint them, I've got them specifically to take to events, and then before I finish those, I'm saying, this is 0200 hours, it's a little game, it's not many models, I've bought it to go and play at events.
She's got you banged to rights when she says, what about the first one?
Yeah, she didn't have to, because I'd already played this out and realised I realised where it goes. So, yeah, hurriedly got my squats moving again. And they're a fun little gang. I've built some of them exactly per the instructions, and when I posted a picture of one of them, Rich was like, oh, that pose is brilliant. It's like, that is straight from the box art.
Good job, Games Workshop designers.
Yeah, turns out, know what they're doing. But then a couple of the guys I've taken some Caradron Overlord bits for. So I made my own version of the suspensor to make the heavy weapons not unwieldy. So those are the little Well, they're actually mines, like floating mines from KO.
Yes,
but
yes.
they look like balloons. So I've used those as like kind of like a balancing thing for the guns. And they've got various like switches and extra stuff on them. And then I've made two of them. We had this discussion about I was a bit. I'd made all of my in-game as having carapace armor, and you cannot get many with that
Yes.
because it's ludicrously expensive. It's more
Yes.
expensive than the Ganga by far,
Yeah.
and it's
Yes.
probably more expensive than they can. And people are saying, "Oh, you've done that wrong." It's like, "What?" And they're like, "Oh, that's literally the one bit of Necromunda that isn't WYSIWYG. We told you everything was WYSIWYG,
Right.
but that bit you just have to."
Yeah.
Give them the thing that's right in the game. And I was like, oh,
Yeah.
okay, fine. You know what you're talking about. Working this morning is not fine, is it? It's not fine. I'm going to buy some Fire Slayers from a bit site,
Hell yeah.
chop them up, whittle their arms down, chop some arms off squats, whittle those, glue it all together. So I've now got two basically naked squats
Yeah.
running around with their stub pistols. And one of them's got an
They're absolutely my favorite.
he's got such a cocky pose. He's like, "Ah, come on, bring it." It's like, you are not
When you
armored.
say more or less naked and cocky pose,
Oh, piss. I forgot who I was talking to.
our opponent down.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I've done those and I've done them in a style where like the materials aren't very like shaded or highlighted, they're just like basic and contrasted on. But then each model's coloured in with a couple of bright colours in contrast, to sort of evoke like neon lighting in sort of a cyberpunk thing. Yeah, I wanted them to look right messy and concept arty, so that's gone really well. Yeah, so I'm happy with those. They're nearly finished. Get those done, and then when my little World War II soldiers arrive, I can do those. But I've already started getting MDF terrain. Building little farmhouses and stuff. Oh, it's good.
Somehow incredibly exciting, and something that we will return to later in the show. JD, what have you been hobbying?
Been relatively hobby light, but I have actually done some stuff. Mostly because it's just been really fucking hot. Like it's just been really uncomfortable, and I struggle to do many things when I'm hot, and painting is definitely one of them. Like when you've got paint on the wet palette and it dries at about the same rate as it would if it was on a not wet palette, you know that it's not great. But I picked up see the Dark Oath Savages for Warcry, kind of to play Warcry with them because it's been a long time since I played Warcry, but also for my Slaves to Darkness with them getting a new book at the end of the year.
Right.
I want to bulk out the sort of Marauder side of my army a little bit with some Warcry weirdos that are painted to match the rest of the army. And yeah, so that's the idea, is that these guys are alongside my Dark Oath Chieftain, who I already have, and they're his war band. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun. I'm not using any contrast for skin, because it turns out painting skin not with contrast is really fun and looks really good. I mean, the contrast skin colours are really good, like I do really like them, but yeah, it's nice to just sort of put a bit more attention into them, especially because they're like
Yeah.
10 models. Like it's not super time consuming.
Find skin is one of those things that is the few things that I feel somewhat confident and competent at actually trying to do blending with, because I'm not a capable blender.
Yeah, like I mean, so one thing I've been doing recently, like with all models that I've painted recently, like my Stormcast and stuff, is that if they've got a face, like not just a helmet, I put like extra. I want to get better at doing faces and doing eyes and things. And with Stormcast, that's kind of easy because I've committed to a all anyone in my Stormcast who has their who's not wearing a helmet has like glowing lightning eyes, and that's easier to do than actually putting like, you know, a
Pupils.
pupil in, you know.
Honestly, for most like human size faces, I just do the whites, and it doesn't really register if you're like further than very close to the model.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've put pupils on some Space Marines, and that with varying success. But yeah, I think with these guys, they're so tiny. Like, well, some of them are fairly hench, but like, there's like a shaman
Little
type
face.
character who's with them, who is absolutely tiny. But just to make life a little bit easier for myself, I chose the head option that has like no eyes. Like there's one where the eyes have been like put out. And also just because it's nice to paint a gross thing occasionally. but yeah, I've got some Stormcast still to finish because I'm going to Throne of Skulls at the end of the month with a pal, and a bunch of our pals are going to that as well, so that's going to be a good weekend, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm taking a Stormcast list that has some stuff in it that I've not painted yet. So yeah, I've got 3 Annihilators to do, and I've got to finish a Wizard, and that's about it.
Awesome. I mean, yeah, so for my personal hobby, it's been 30k all day. I've been painting a hell of a lot of Sons of Horus. So I got the Age of Darkness box when it came out, obviously. I was never not going to get that. And then I think I've painted all of it bar 10 Marines as Sons of Horus. And most of those are done now. So I can tick that box off the list. I played a game at Warhammer Worlds this weekend of 30k against the Alpha Legion, who absolutely wrecked my entire day. They're very, very good. Heaps of fun. I agree with you, Tom. Like, the reaction system is super good. But I also picked up a cheeky bit of resin whilst I was in Nottingham. May as well, right? So I am, as we speak, painting a little man with a banner, because it turns out they're really good in the new Heresy rules, because they make an extra unit able to score objectives, which is quite useful in a lot of missions.
It's the like generic Sons of Horus banner bearer, right? That's such a cool fucking
game. Yeah.
They absolutely knocked it out of the park with that one. The only other Legion-specific banner bearer is the Imperial Fist, and he is dull as shit.
A lesser, more tribal man would say, stands to reason, because he's an Imperial Fist. Ha-ha! But I would never say that. I would never. I actually don't remember what that guy looks like, to be fair. Maybe that speaks to how distinctive it is. I do have the non-Legion banner guy for my Blood Angels, and I don't rate that guy particularly highly, because I couldn't fit on my big transfer of Sanguineus onto the banner, so it clearly sucks.
Yeah, I thought about how to do a herald for my own legion, and probably what I'm going to do is give the Custodes banner to a Cataphractor.
Yeah, I think that'll work really well, because the whole eagle motif fits in with Imperial Fists really, really nicely, I think.
Yeah, and it means that I don't need to either do some big freehand or stick a transfer over something freehanded, because like I said, I'm looking at the Forge World Imperial Fist banner bearer guy right now, and it looks like a transfer on a yellow square.
Nice.
It's not the worst of it, but I am aware that I would look at my version of it and think, this is not as good as I want, but I can't do better.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, which is a really horrible place to be, and I think in that, you know, I have reached the limits of my abilities, and it's on the big centerpiece guy. So no, I'm gonna use a piece that I can just paint in a metal color.
Yeah, and it'll look really good, I think. Cool. So let's move on to topics. Let's start with you, Tom. What have you got for us to discuss today?
So the question I considered, I could have sworn we'd done this one before, but apparently not. I got the go-ahead to go with it.
Well, as my last podcast appearance proves, having had something happen before is no impediment to simply just forgetting and then saying it again. So sorry, Crunchy.
So my question is for you folks, what does your dream event look like? If you got to be the person, realize I'm saying this to people who have been in charge of events, but if you got to be the person in charge of a big event and have all the other players as the puppets dancing on your strings, what would you set up? What would your big day of hobby be?
Oh, you're giving me anxiety. This question starts as like, oh, what's your dream event look like? And then goes
and then
into,
you've got to organise it, pal.
Everyone's weekend's on the line. They're going to be furious. Okay, you're not going to sleep. It's not even real.
Like, what's the equivalent of like a hobby stag weekend where you just get to tell somebody else to do the work of setting it up?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
To give the instructions and then you get somebody else to do
Because my stag do was a brewery tour and then board games in a pub beer garden until we went back to the accommodation and played board games. But yeah, my mate had to organise it. So
hell yeah.
Okay.
So that, but miniatures, I guess.
Yeah, so if I can, you know, effortlessly bend the will of someone to run this tournament for me.
And why not?
Okay. Yeah, I think that's in my wheelhouse. Yeah. Okay. I think for me it's a narrative event, but not one with a big story necessarily. For me, my favourite wargaming is, I've turned up, I have a little bit of an idea of who these people are, maybe. They're red. But what I'm going to find interesting about them is the stuff that comes out of playing games with them. And I want to be able to make suboptimal decisions and it not just be costly. And maybe my opponent reciprocates. And I want to be able to make rules up. Got a bunch of that at Whitney Warhammer, which, Tom, I think you went to the year before. Last year, and I went to it this year. So I got this thing that my Liberator Primes were trying to be heroes, which involved getting the rest of their unit killed and then acting like a hero. And so that ended up with Liberator Prime fighting a Bloodthirster. So my opponent was like, oh, she can have a heroic action. Like, she can have her finest hour. Like, because that fits into that. And that's not something you do in a competitive event. Like, I'd been to Brotherhood the week before and I had lovely lovely fun games played in a really nice atmosphere. No one was winning, all costing around each other, but you wouldn't do something like that. You wouldn't just play around the system and use the system as a basis. You'd only play up to the lines. So for me, it's that. And then, you know, something happened with my Lord Relictor when no one was looking. He prayed at an ancient altar and, something happened and there was blood. So at the next Whitney Warhammer, something will happen and I'll be able to tell people like, oh, this is a thing, and maybe he'll get to do something special. So for me, it's just it's not open play, GW open play, but you know, it's pretty open and narrative in that sense.
Yeah. Using wargaming as a framework to sort of telling a story and having a good time.
Yeah. So my only requirement for the event would be everyone be exactly like-minded to me. Because it probably wouldn't have much structural barriers, or maybe it does and I need other people to care about those and play within that. Like, you know, there were other people picking where we went and I was just like, go and I'll just have a laugh with my opponent and see how quickly I can get all my models killed. And I don't know if it works if everyone's doing that, but that would be the dream.
I think I'm along very similar lines, to be honest. Like, I think I would like a big story at my narrative event, but not as a way to railroad players. More as just like a hang your cool little stories that happen in game off this framework, basically.
Contextualize.
That's exactly it. Like, I like having the little cool moments that come out of games, but I do like, to be able to contextualize that within a broader narrative. It is something I've been thinking about because I've been trying to figure out the bones of a kill team narrative event that will feed into, ideally would feed into a later 40k narrative event. And I've sent Pete the event pack for this that I've been working on to like get his opinion and stuff, and it's I want it to be quite loose, like you say, being able to bend the rules slightly to facilitate cool things happening is, I think, pretty key to it for my enjoyment. Like, I think I don't want to get those moments where it's like, well, it'd be really cool if this thing happened, but because of the way the rules interact and because of with the optimal decision or whatever, it's not going to work out like that. Yeah, that's the sort of thing I like to avoid, really. Because it takes the wind out of your sails a little bit to have, like, this is a cool thing to have. This would be a cool thing to happen, but it can't happen. Like, it's a problem that I've, you know, but for example, bumped into in like D&D 5th edition is that you want, if you want to have your cool edgy assassin, you can't because it doesn't work like, because the combat system in that game doesn't work like that. Yeah, like I said, yeah, exactly. It's, but yeah, very similar to RM's, or Michael's idea is that, yeah, a narrative event, it would have to be, it wouldn't be a comp thing. Just, yeah, where you can be a bit looser with how the game fits together and come up with interesting ways to sort of bend it a little bit around a cool narrative.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess my answer's probably going to be a bit of a cheesy one, but
oh no.
My answer is basically
anyone where I get to play with my friends.
Well, no, I mean, that is
oh, was it not even that?
My answer is. No, no.
Oh, shit.
But, I mean, as somebody who's organised, I think, most Rumro events that we do on our server, I guess I quite like them. And I would just like to do more. I think one thing that I would love to improve is, like, having more of a structure for people getting games, because the typical way our events go is we book a venue, people turn up, and then maybe some people have organized in advance, oh, I'll play you on Wednesday and you on Friday or whatever. I mean, literally always on a weekend, so I don't know why I said those days, but
and Thursday I'm just not,
yeah, exactly,
up.
Yeah, have a day of rest. Thursday, the day of rest.
Friday I'm in
but yeah, no, I think a thing that I could improve with this is having some kind of system for people organizing games in advance. I'm really not sure how I would do that, because unless it's like very strict, yeah, which is what I've done for the upcoming 30k event, where I've literally matched everyone together and saying you're playing this person in the morning and X, you know, the other person in the evening. And I don't think that would necessarily fit a rollout event, because they're quite open and social and, you know, don't have the iron hand of some sort of 30k player mentality behind it. But there must be a better way is basically what I'm driving at.
Yes. Yeah, I understand. It's definitely... You can definitely end up in situations where you're just like... the last person wandering around. You're having a perfectly pleasant time.
Yeah, but you don't want to be the ghost at the ball. And I think part of the problem with what I want to happen is sometimes people do want to drift around for like a few hours. And there needs to be space to accommodate that as well.
Yeah.
Basically, somebody needs to build an app where you can opt in and out at will. And it's basically like Grindr, but for Warhammer.
I should do those. My brother went to a university party where everybody wore a bracelet with a colour that indicated single and looking,
single and up for it
in a relationship. Something like that, where you wear a bracelet of a colour saying looking for a game. Not looking for a game.
So basically, at the next event, it has to basically be a traffic light party.
If you have a handkerchief in your right pocket, it's 40k. And in your left pocket, it's AOS. That's okay.
So I imagine people listening will know the context of these, but if anyone doesn't, these are not multi-hundred people events with strangers. These are broadly events with people who mostly all know each other. And there's not all that many. I feel like this is massively over-engineered and scariest.
Rather than just walking up to somebody and saying, "Do you want to play a game of AOS with me, please?"
Yeah, which is terrifying. You know, but the alternative,
whilst making obscene gestures with your hands.
Yeah, I'm stood in a corner with like a red handkerchief in my pocket, going, "I've just been ignored, and I bought a handkerchief."
Who can intuit this?
Wait, does the red handkerchief mean war cry or kill team?
What if there's like an abacus and there's each of our faces
oh, for fuck's sake.
on each bead of the abacus.
Bingo machine. Right. Bingo machine and I'm back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. And then you get matched with somebody who only has 30k and suddenly there's a real weird game happening.
Which I'd be massively up for. Open
yeah,
play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Open play.
Stormcast versus Nightlords. Go. How about you, Tom? What's your ideal event?
I really loved the Apocalypse game we played that one time. The Apocalypse system itself is fine.
Oh! I actually think low key, really good rule set. Basically, just because it's epic. But
the other Tom is running towards his microphone right now. He said it's only fine. It's the best thing in the world.
There's a part for me that really misses the granularity of 40k on a large scale. But I really do understand that it's a fairly niche requirement to want to play really serious Warhammer for 19 hours in a row. So I won't go too hard on that one. But there was a White Dwarf. They've probably done this several times, but the one I remember was the White Dwarf for the release of the Stomper. Mm-hmm. So if you've got access to the Warhammer Vault, it might well be in there. So check it out. But they did a multi-table Apocalypse game with a table of the main Orc assault on an Imperial city and secondary tables for other fights going on around the same planet. And each side, because there was just the Orc team and the Imperial team, had a certain amount of reserves that they could put wherever they wanted, and had a single Grand Commander, and the two commanders played a much smaller game on a satellite orbiting the planet and could shoot lasers down at it. I would love to be involved in one of those. I would love to put loads of stuff on the board in a big group of people and do stuff like assign reserves to a specific battle force or something.
Like Battlefield 2. Who remembers that? No one. Shit. Yeah, no, that sounds really cool. I think having that like interactivity between tables and stuff is I think it's hard to do it well, but when it is done well, it works. Like, and it's really satisfying.
It's something I very much like the idea of. I have this weird compulsion to be part of things where like I am just a small part of something greater. Like there's some weird like intrinsic appeal of that to me.
Where, that's like, the communist in you, JD.
Yeah, but like I have like it's. I mean, the video game analog of it is Battlefield, right? Where like,
right,
you have this.
Who remembers Battlefield 2?
Yeah, you have this cool moment, like where you know you do something really awesome and kick ass, but it doesn't have like a broad impact on like the rest of what's going on around you. Like, I don't know, there's something cool about that to me. Like, you know, you get the moment where the biplane crashes in front of you. And it looks really cool, and you know that was somebody else's cool moment. Like, I don't know, there's just something, and yeah, being part of that in like a 40k or AOS context is really cool. And like, yeah, the ability to have games influenced by other games that are happening around you, or like, think just anything like that, just really sparks joy to me.
Mm.
Yeah, like to send off to a Supreme Commander and say, hey, can I have some reinforcements, please? And then somebody comes over to your table with a few drop pods full of Ultramarines or whatever and goes, here you go, deploy these as you wish.
This makes me remember the Minis monthly meetup that we had in Cardiff.
Yeah,
I think that was an instance of it done really well, and also an instance where it kind of chimes, I think, with your preferences, RM, where it was quite free form. And like, for example, I was having a game Skaven against Stormcast and Dwarves, and at one point, like three turns in or whatever, a bloody was it a Star Drake just came crashing through the ceiling of our
fell through the ceiling yeah, into your game
and you know joined the Stormcast side halfway through and then flew off again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, that was quite fun.
Whereas I was playing Chimp, and if Nagash won that, he got to go and join the big table right. with the hosts. And we got to the point where he was clearly going to win the game. So I said, well, do you want to go and take Nagash? And then, you know, in between your turns over there, I called the game, and then we both agreed that we wanted to keep playing if we could. Mm-hmm. So we kept playing a bit without Nagash on the table, and, well, while he was able to, which is nice.
He was doing his thing.
Yeah, like, so we, on my side of that, we had essentially three order players on, like, there was a string of three tables, like, all linked together. And the idea was that it was three, like, order-aligned players versus three destruction players. I think it was all Iron Jaws or Orcs of some kind. And the idea was that we were defending the Stormkeep from a great big war. But there was the cool thing of, like, every time anyone cast a spell, that gave Chris, playing Tzeentch on the big table, extra summoning points. Mm. Or fate points, rather. And that was cool. Like, you know, every time I cast, I don't know, Arcane Bolt or Mega Boss or something, I then have to walk... I then walk over and give the Chaos player an extra summoning point. But then because the destruction side of that did so well, because it turns out that Iron Jaw's good, honest fun, just absolutely rolled over everybody. So there was me playing Stormcast. There was... I can't remember who was playing on those tables now. There was somebody next to me playing Nighthorn. And then there was, I think it was... Nielsen playing Caladrin.
Yeah.
Yes. And but the destruction side just absolutely mullet. Like, I think my game was over in about two or three turns. Like, and it was about 90 minutes.
Classic.
But then because they did so well, yeah, on the big game, so Nagash appeared, and then a bunch of orcs just turn up on the other side of the table, like because they've just mopped up this Stormcast resistance so quickly. They're able to then join this great big fight. It was, yeah, just a very cool, like, moment. Just thing to be part of, basically. And feel like your small part in it contributed to the main narrative. That was really cool.
That is coming up on 4 years ago, and we all remember it pretty well.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't.
I think it is.
God damn, we've got to do it again.
I think you're right. Fuck.
God damn.
Yeah, 2018. Yeah, November 2018, I think.
God. What a world.
Should. Yeah.
All right, then. Well, I think we'll move on to the next topic, which is mine. and, oh boy, it's a heavyweight one. Basically, I want to talk a bit, somewhat generally, about historical games, because I know it's something that doesn't appeal to all wargamers. I think there's some level of squeamishness, and quite... you know, fairly as well, with playing it, or, you know, recreations of real conflicts. And I guess I kind of want to, in response to that, not to, like, say to anyone, you are wrong about this, you should play historicals, but I guess I want to talk about, like, why I find historical wargaming compelling from somebody who is sort of, you know, I always consider myself to be switched on to history, even now. I've done a bachelor's degree in it, don't you know? It's pretty advanced. I like to keep reading historical stuff and, you know, current theories about things that I studied and how I can sort of, in some small way, tie that into wargaming. So... And I think we've got a pretty good split here between people what do historicals and people what don't. So that's good for that, I think. So yeah, I guess what I would say is, like, the only historicals I currently play are, like, World War II ones, which is obviously, like, one of the more thorny like, hey, I'm playing as the Nazis sort of
yeah,
periods that you can do historicals about. And I do, I literally have a Wehrmacht, you know, army of the Nazi states army for Flames of War.
Terrifying moment there. I thought you were going to say uniform.
We don't do that anymore.
Like Charlie from Always Sunny eating a banana in an SS uniform.
I haven't got an SS army. That would be.
So you know, say, I haven't got a banana.
Actually, really don't like bananas. So clearly, that's the one thing holding me back. But yeah, no. So I think the thing that I like about like that specific avenue of fuck's sake, JD.
We've sent JD.
Oh, I've lost it.
So yeah, sorry. The thing I like about that specific thing, that specific like aspect and era of wargaming is I think it gives you an opportunity to look at the reality behind the sort of myth of what World War II was, and you know, there's a sort of, and I think JD will be pretty familiar with this, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but there's a pretty widely believed myth that like the German army was like hyper elite, and the only reason that they lost was they were just overwhelmed with weight of numbers, and the Soviets were like, you know, these Asiatic hordes. And obviously the reality is far more complicated than that.
Yeah,
and
the idea that like the Nazis were let down by their high command, like this whole thing of Hitler being personally involved in,
yes,
in planning campaigns and stuff, and that's what ultimately led to their fall. And it, yeah, it's,
yes,
it,
well, which doesn't, it's bear much historical scrutiny, as far as I can tell. You know, Hitler did certainly make decisions on military strategy, and then his generals tended to agree with him. And when they didn't like get, you know, exiled or executed or anything. So it's not like they weren't allowed to. And then the other aspects of this that I think is harder to sort of explore with like mainstream like wargaming formats is like the belief that German equipment was this like absolutely incredible, like world beating stuff. Whereas the reality is more complicated, and you know, things might have been good on paper that ended up not being good in practice. And you know, the game that I play the most historically is Flames of War, and I think that really does kind of fall into the trap of like German stuff is just better. I
think that's perhaps a common stereotype of the bad guys.
I wonder because I do think,
like, I'm thinking of Isengard, for example.
But I think, right, the other thing with Isengard is they are like this vast horde. Like, yes, they're disciplined, and yes, yeah, they're well equipped.
Yeah, obviously there's Tolkien's usual.
Sure, sure. But, as an early 20th century British man, he has his own biases.
Yes. Yeah, but I'm wondering whether some of these things come in because we are so used to narratives that are the plucky, undergunned, outnumbered good guys versus the, like, look at the Death Star versus the bunch of individual, yeah, yeah, fighters. Or I wonder if that's outnumbered,
certainly, but I think the sort of technological advantage, I think you certainly see going the other way as well. Like, you get the few,
sure,
you know, civilized heroes versus,
right,
the absolute weight of numbers, yes, and savagery, and
yeah,
you know, all the horrific views. Yes. But all into that, you know, you can go that other way as well.
Yeah, which I guess speaks to two different, yeah, aspects of like what bad guy-ness is.
Yeah. You're probably going to have an, yes, asymmetry. Probably just through the, yes, nature of it, but yeah, I think the good guy, point, bad guy, point, I think you can set up either of them as
certainly, those paradigms. Yeah,
yes.
Which, yeah, arguably, because, so, is what happens, yes, with like the Soviet, right? Is that, right, that,
exactly,
is the horde,
they're
of technologically, yes, inferior, like horribly, right, under, but,
yes,
only kept in line by
even,
you know, institutional
brutal
savagery and brutality.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's another ring.
Even in
well,
the even when you take it forward into Cold War narratives, right, you get that same stereotype of the different
and
factions.
It, you know, that comes into the other sort of historical, well, historical with air quotes, I guess, in this instance, game that I play, which is Team Yankee, which is about what if World War III happened in 1985. And yeah, you very much get that because the Soviet and Eastern Bloc armies in that are hordes. And then if you go into the even more problematic fun time of the oil war expansion, you know, all the Arab nations are like incredible hordes, and you know, the Iranian unmechanized troops that you can field, it's all very
So like I've dipped my toe into historicals a little bit by buying an Iran starter box for Team Yankee's oil war expansion, but I think that maybe digs into some of the bits of where I'm not super keen on historicals. Well, at least historicals that are set within living memory, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like
yes,
yeah, the whole deal with Iran in Team Yankee is that more so than any other faction, you are relying heavily on your infantry to just go forth in waves and die in droves, but basically hold the objective and be an absolute nightmare to shift. Which, yeah, I mean, you can then examine, you know, bits of the Iran-Iraq war and so on. And, you know, it was a thing, you know, the human wave tactics were a thing that the Iranians did.
Right.
But yeah, it does lead to some uncomfortable soul searching, I think. That's what's part of what's led me to abandon that particular project.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely less comfortable when I was looking at source materials for my British Army of the Rhine when I search results came up with it from what was conflict in Eastern Europe that we're in? Would it have been Kosovo?
The Yugoslav wars.
The dissolution of Yugoslavia in the 90s.
Yeah, pictures from that. It's like, oh, I was just trying to do a Cold War gone hot. Like, the army that was in Rhineland and stationed but didn't see, you know, an action. Imagine if it had, rather than, oh, actually, I guess a few years later, the exact same stuff went and did fire, or, like...
Yes.
I was like, oh, I wanted to be a bit distanced from this. Quickly put that back off. I got over it quite fast, but...
Yeah.
Because I come at it from a very different angle. I don't use it to inspect my feelings. Or my thoughts on it, or the history, or anything. None of it is that for me. It's just entertainment, and it's the Mark Corrigan. Anything that kill a man is fascinating. there's an element of that, you know. So I find
like typing an SAS man,
like painting camo on very small tanks, and trying not to think about it too much. I watch the films of it, so I know that, you know. If I didn't paint this, I wouldn't be any less of a hypocrite about this stuff. So I don't lose sleep. Don't get me wrong.
I absolutely love that side of it as well. Like, I, as a 30K guy, I love recreating stuff that existed or quote-unquote existed. I am a person that finds military stuff very, very interesting. You know, I am a white guy in my 30s. I can't pretend not to be enthralled by that stuff as well. But I do like to try to use it as a way to like research more about the conflicts that it depicts and or the periods that it's set in.
I think it's just a mindset thing, right? Like, I think everyone has their own way of engaging with stuff, and I wouldn't say that any approach is wrong. It's just, it depends. It's just what yours is, right?
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah.
Like for me, so my thing with, like, say for example, bolt action, which seems like a really good rule set that I'd be interested to actually play. Someone has to be the bad guy, right? Like, and I don't want to lovingly paint a Nazi half track. Like, I don't want to sit there putting Iron Cross decals on a Panzer. Like, it just
can't believe you're coming for me like this.
This is the thing. Like, this is why I wanted to front load, is that I'm not coming for anybody in particular.
No,
about
of course,
it. Like,
of course.
And I think particularly Pete, your approach to it is a really like admirable one. And I no one here is you know the sort of person that does buy into the Werribee thing of like the Tiger One is the greatest tank to have ever existed.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where like my level of comfort with it reaches a certain point. Like the you know the Iran thing, you are modeling with the Team Yankee stuff that I was doing. Like I got to a point where I was thinking about doing some mechanized infantry to go alongside the militias, and then realized, well, if I'm doing this historically, the ones that would be the mechanized infantry and have the better gear would be the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And I was like, okay, there's a level of this that I'm not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Like
so they've got their own fun history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things where I reached a point with it where I was more uncomfortable than I was enjoying it.
I know everyone has to set those limits for themselves, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I think this is kind of where I sit on it as well, in that the amount of getting into something I like to do for an army I'm painting or a project I'm working on or a game mechanical system mm-hmm. I'm engaging with is high enough that I personally would feel uncomfortable doing that for the fucking right. Nazis, right? Different people will have different comfort levels, and I do not think that my own personal comfort level is where the moral line
right.
Yeah, 100% agree.
And different people will get different amounts into things. There is absolutely people who could just bash out a bunch of Wehrmacht and put them on the tabletop as little mechanical pieces, and that's...
Yes, we can.
That's fine. Obviously fine, yeah. But I think, I don't know, I do not think I have any leg to stand on talking shit about any level of engagement in that kind of thing, because I work for, this is on my Twitter feed, so it's not private information, but I, for my job, work for Rebellion as a designer on the Sniper Elite games, so...
And hey, you
my
shoot
big
Nazis
project
in that.
Recently was
that's admirable.
Yeah, wow. It's pretty anti-Nazi generally.
But you made it so I can play as a Nazi
yes,
sniper.
I was
right?
That is true. That's a good point.
Yes, yeah, that was my project. That was my project. Was the new game mode where you get to put on the other side. So that starts from interesting things like how do we make, you know, the first question was how do we make the boss fights better? Well, can we put a person in as a boss fight? And gets filtered through so many levels of mechanical engagement that at some point you kind of end up with, yeah, you can be the Nazi, can't you?
I think,
and people have largely loved it.
I think for me personally,
thumbs up on that one.
For me personally, though, I think there's like, so for example, you know, Call of Duty World at War or Battlefield 5 or whatever, where it is World War 2 and you are playing a primarily multiplayer game, so somebody has to be the bad guy. Like I feel like for me personally, there's a difference between it going, you are on the Wehrmacht side, and so the voice barks that you hear are in German or whatever. Like rather than sitting and again, like I say, lovingly painting a Panzer IV. You know, I think
yes.
there's enough of a difference for me there with it, with the level of engagement that I'm okay with it in a video game, sort of.
And it certainly is a different level of engagement, I think.
And where do you as a player sit on, I am doing this thing, I am pressing a button to make a guy on the screen do this thing, right? That kind of, I think that level of separation really only exists
exactly.
in your
right.
head.
Yeah, because I personally never think of myself as like personified in a game or in a war game.
Yes,
even
yeah.
more so.
Yeah,
like in that specific battle report I was talking about earlier, one of the people in it had named his Imperial Guard commander
right.
after himself, and I remember even when I first read that at a fairly tender age, I remember thinking. Little plastic guy. It's not me.
If you're bad at war games and you think Nazis are bad, Is it incumbent on you to play the Nazis so they lose? Mm.
So yeah, so they get absolutely spanked.
This is the logical extension of me thinking that, like, because I know the people who play, like, Flames at War, and they're big into playing, like, Red versus Blue. Like, you wouldn't have British against Americans, right? So that Pete has a Wehrmacht army does allow that he could play his friend with a British or American army, presumably, and therefore, if they had one, then they can reciprocate and he can get to play his. I imagine there's an element to it of that, but as you say, I think you're distanced enough from it that you're not like, I'm playing the Germans, you're using the Germans. Like, they're...
Yes.
Yeah, it's not Sturmbannführer Fienje on the battlefield.
It's fine that you know the word. It's fine.
Fienje,
I know all this shit, my man.
I think part of it...
never stop.
Part of it is that, like... So I know that if I got a Flames of War Soviet army, for example, and I played against Pete, I know then that, like, I know the angle that Pete approaches it from and all that kind of stuff. Whereas if I played someone at a local store, I maybe this is overblown, but I would be worried about running into that guy who is genuinely, like, you know, a Wehrmacht apologist or whatever. Like, you know, the sort of person who quite happily justify playing as the Wehrmacht by saying, oh, but they're just German soldiers. They weren't members of the Nazi
they were
party.
They following orders. Exactly.
Like, I'd be worried about that sort of thing. And again, it might take on an outsized importance in my own head, but, like...
Do you know, it's really funny that you say that, because part of the reason that I don't play Bolt Action anymore is because I went to a tournament years ago, 5-6 years ago, and had one really nice game and then two horrible games against horrible people. And the one really nice game was against the guy that played the German army. And then there was one game that was horrible, but just because it was, like, complete rules flattening, I was, like, completely new and, you know, whatever, these things happen. And then the final game was a guy who got this incredible Belgian colonial force and kept making comments. One about, you know... The soldiers he was commanding that were quite racist, and two, about wanting to catch up with my Soviet army that included some women in it because they wanted to do things to the women. Oh, so, yeah, that was a really bad experience.
For fuck's sake. Yeah. Like, I mean, I remember when I was looking into, like, Team Yankee stuff, I found the Team Yankee subreddit, and I avoid Reddit generally as just a matter of course, but sometimes it just leads you there and sometimes you'll find really good information there. But I remember looking on the Team Yankee subreddit, and one of the topics of conversation was, and I remember I actually sent you a screenshot of this, Pete, because I was so blown away by it. Someone was saying, how can I use Team Yankee to model the Rhodesian Bush War? And I was like, oh my God, no. Okay, so, like, you know, cards on the table.
That's a niche interest.
Well, like, cards on the table. Like, I think I have, like, a great uncle who fought in that war.
Right.
Because my family are white Africans, well, from Zimbabwe particularly.
Mm.
So I know a lot of the problematic, you know, sides of that war. And yeah, seeing this guy being like, oh yeah, how can I model this war? I want to be the Rhodesian Defense Force. And I was like, okay. So I looked on his profile because I thought, I've got a suspicion here, and let's see if it plays out. And it absolutely did play out. Turns out, yeah, it was all like proper neo-Nazi shit. And I was like, oh, fuck's sake. Like, it's maybe that shouldn't impact my personal enjoyment or desire to play historicals, but it just does.
Yeah,
it's, like, hard not to, because I mean I would happily play Bolt Action again, but I think not in a sort of open I don't know who I'm playing against context. And that holds true of all the historicals that I play now. Like, I play with people from our community because we have a progressive bunch of users, and I'm like 99% confident that nobody's getting into historicals from our side of things with this, like, weird revisionist revenge fantasy, you know, what if I could be the white guy that killed everyone else sort of mindset, whereas you don't know with the general public. they're a mixed bag.
Whereas I just want to do commandos.
Yeah.
I've bought into 0200 hours.
Yeah.
It's a fun night raids game. And I've started playing commandos behind enemy lines again. It's really good when you're grown up and you can actually do it. I'm like seven missions in, and a lot of those missions I never beat before.
I don't think I completed a single mission of that when I was a kid. Just cheated my way through.
I definitely think that sometimes the historical nature is a consequence of a genre, right? That if the commando vibe is what you're interested in, you're going to end up in World War II.
Yeah,
yeah, more likely than...
And
I'm playing pulp.
Yes.
And World War II is a big pulp setting.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's more likely that somebody will say, I will use the World War II setting for this vibe than it is, I will make an entire new fictional universe to accommodate
to tell this story. Yeah. I will use this historical setting.
Right.
Yeah, and specifically, I want to do the stuff from Where Eagles Dare. I want to do stuff from Commandos Behind Enemy Lines. I want to do it from The Longest Day.
Yeah.
I really regret not buying the greenhouse,
which
from
I think
Sarissa.
Is.
They do a greenhouse. It'd be like that bit from the film where his boots are on the wrong feet. It would be brilliant. That's all I want. Don't need decals for that.
I'm having to do so much good time this episode. And I think so. That's a very asymmetrical game, right? But is it a single player?
No, it's not.
Is there
single player rules for it, but it is strictly two player. So you as the attacker
need a Fianya to play the Nazis.
Yeah.
You as the attacker basically have a lot of agency at all times. You can move your people. You can do sneak moves, you can do advances. You can't shoot at any guards until your commandos have spotted them. You have to make recon rolls. But also when you do stuff, you stand the chance of being detected. You roll a dice and it's got on it a face which says you've made some noise or you've been seen or whatever. I, as the defender, can only move my guards on a patrol or the non-patrolling ones. I can make a random direction move. And if I get two successes, I can choose which direction. But it's all for me about picking the order I move. It was the patrol route that I set up before the game. And also I get some event cards. I get cards that say, actually you stepped on a twig, like any neutral results you rolled actually counts as you've made a noise, or the moon comes out, or you got a Dear John letter last night. You might fail that willpower check. really fun stuff like that. So my card, or they reverse my patrol or whatever. I have stuff that lets me change what I'm doing, exert some agency, and also I get to play the environment. You as the attacker are playing against it. But what I can't do is go, my guard doesn't know where Tom's commando is, but I'm just going to have him walk into the way anyway.
Right.
Because I don't have that agency. Yeah. I don't get to always choose the direction people go. Until it kicks off and the alarm goes off, and until I start seeing you, and then I get a bunch more agency, and stuff starts to switch in my favour, and I get additional dice rolls and stuff like that. It's a really interesting bit of design. I think where it might fall down is if it gets a bit boring for the defender, if you don't feel like you have agency,
if the attacker does well enough, does the defender not really does the defender get interesting choices until?
But at its worst, that's up there with, I got Alfred in AOS or 40K. Right. Like these games are not.
Yes.
These games are not immune to.
Right.
I had all my agency taken off me.
Not. Yeah.
It would be aligned with I'm the defender and I got all the agency taken off me. But you know, still, it wouldn't be unheard of for a game.
It sounds like it's got quite a strong protagonist, because you said using the environment, so it sounds like it's protagonist antagonist or even protagonist environment, right, as opposed to
player one and player two.
Yes. Right. When you get a pitched battle and it is essentially equal and balanced.
Yeah. So the defender will have more.
It's discarding that in terms of.
It's very much attacker defender.
Yes.
But it's asymmetric in terms of what you can do as well. Yeah.
Not entirely unlike player DM, right?
Yes.
As in, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really interesting bit of design. It's the game that I'm most excited about in so long. I love my Warhammer games and the chance to play with my toys. I'm less excited about getting and painting these toys. But the game looks like a really nice bit of game design, and I'm planning to bring it to a run row and just have a stream of JD, was it you took people through Kill Team? And people were like, yeah, that seemed like really good. I basically want to do that for 0200 hours and be like, roll up, come and be commanders.
I very much look forward to being customer number one on this.
I'd very much be.
you've sold me on it. I'm on the website now.
Hell yeah!
So yeah, I've been building MDF farms. I got the radar defense set, which is built by Sarissa, but 0200 hours sort of recommend it and sell it.
I didn't know you could grow MDF on a farm.
Right, that's the end of the pod.
And another joke crashes into the mountain side.
Well, that wraps that subject up, I think. Oh dear. Right, JD, shall we talk about your question?
Yeah. So I what I do with all of my armies and things, and as Pete can attest, RPG campaigns as well. I like to just sit sometimes when I've got nothing else to do and just write little bits of like lore and fiction and things like that around, you know, my self inserts essentially. Do any of you do the same thing? And do you go to the same lengths that I do? Because so for my Slaves to Darkness, for example, I've got a whole like document that is just everything about them, like their history, their culture, like the cultures they draw from, all that kind of stuff. And like all of my heroes have names, they've got vibes, they've got their own war bands and things like that. So like certain units in my army are key to certain heroes. And like same with my Stormcast, they've got like a history, they've got a place where their souls are mostly drawn from to create this particular Stormhost. Just all that sort of stuff. Like I go apeshit for it, basically. I love
JD,
to just sit and do it.
Have you shipped them?
I have not shipped them, no.
Oh, okay.
Maybe my Dark Oath War Queen and my Lord Celestine have a forbidden thing going on.
Rivals to lovers.
I mean, my Slaves to Darkness and most of my Stormcast are from the same place originally, so who knows? But yeah,
complicated history.
Yeah, I want to know, like, yeah, if you guys do the same thing, or if you do it to the same extent, basically.
Michael, do you want to kick us off with this one?
Yeah, no, I don't. I name my heroes. I name my heroes. I'm really bad at coming up with this. I'm just not a sort of. I've realised I'm not really a creative writer like that. I'm much more. I've realised I do all my thinking while I'm talking, which, you know, can have its difficulties at work, but I'm sort of creative with that back and forth in a conversation, and a game can be that.
Well, I think that ties into what you were saying about your event preferences.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is you like the stories that come out of the games as opposed to it being very set beforehand, right?
Yeah, so I struggle to do this, and I've sort of come to terms with it. I've realised I basically don't. Although I've got an event coming up in October and I was working out what to take, and I was thinking of taking my Skaven because I think I've never put that Doom Wheel on the table before and I really want it. But I wasn't feeling super enthused because a lot of the rest of the army isn't that well painted. And I wanted a hook into it. And then I can't remember the order of the thoughts. I had one thought was, what if my Claw Lord thought that he was a Stormcast? And then I thought, oh, he could name the Rat Ogres Bastion and Karthalos. And I'm like, yeah, I'm taking his army. So that's what I
Amazing.
So my Claw Lord thinks he's a Lord Important.
I still absolutely love that joke. You told it to me the other day, and honestly, I still just love it. It's so good.
And the other heroes are other misheard Stormcast names.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I think they... So, like, this is basically the fullest extent. I'm probably not going to write it down, but I've got enough that I can, at the table, say to my opponent, this was the thing, actually, with the Liberator Primes. I was able to say, oh, my grand strat is to get one of my, you know, unit leaders down to just the one and then go and do something heroic. And I got to tell this little bit of story. That's about the limit of what I want. I don't get a huge amount from writing it down. So what I want for this is just like, oh, yeah, I've named them. Maybe I've made a fun, like, drawn out card for them, but I probably won't do any stories. I won't get a huge amount of that, but enough that I can give my opponent a bit of, like, an impression of what they are, a bit of a laugh about them. It's probably the limit for me. So that's similar for you, Tom.
Yeah. So I tend to, I do like naming characters. And do tend to try and pretend that they are consistent people. For my Imperial Fists, I've got a list of got a list on my phone of the character models in the army and what each of them is called. And I do have some ideas for what their vibe is, what they've been involved in. And yeah, so you can, if you can stick with one project for long enough, which is always my problem, you can end up building an interesting narrative for like a dude or a couple of dudes just by taking them through a bunch of games.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, you know, yeah. You do have to conveniently ignore all the bits where they die.
Yes.
If you see my Praetor being insta-killed by a
contemptor, he got better.
No, you didn't.
Got better.
Yeah.
I find that AOS can be better for this stuff purely because, you know, my three main armies for AOS are like two Chaos armies and Stormcast, and like all of them have ways to just come back. You know, if a Stormcast dies, they come back. You know, if a demon dies, it doesn't die. It comes back. It comes back from the realm of chaos. Like, even if, like, you know, a Slave to Darkness, you know, Chaos Lord dies,
there was some magic spell to revive.
Yeah, or they're destined for something greater or something like that. So they come back.
Yeah.
So
I was going to say, it can be a little bit annoying as a reader of the fiction, but it is quite convenient that the way, like, I would say 2 in 3 grudge matches in the Horus Heresy end is by, like, one person being dragged away, shaking their fist, both members surviving, just angrier. Yeah.
Korax and Lorgar.
Yes, I'm thinking specifically of Abaddon, who gets teleported out of places so frequently he should be getting...
He is good at deep striking, to be fair, so maybe that kind of works.
Sure, but it's the amount of times that, like, he's just about to die, and an underling... Yeah, he's got the mark and recall, and an underling just shoops him out of there, and he's very cross about it.
So I mostly don't do this at all. I don't even name most of my characters, but there is one project that I have where I've done quite a lot of sort of character building and stuff, which is my Imperial Knights army. And I think, one, it's because the sort of the fantasy of that captured my attention quite strongly at the time. And two, I think it's because that project has a cast of characters which you can count on the fingers of two hands. So it's really quite manageable to do. Like, you're not keeping up with, like, units and, you know, the 7 heroes you bought, and maybe you bring 4 of them in a certain game. You have, like, you know, 3 big guys and 4 little ones in any given game, and you can kind of just run that forever. So I have actually created, like, a full family tree, you know, different noble titles that all the characters have, and I've actually commission somebody to paint art or draw art of them. So yeah, I do have that sort of desire, but it's very rarely expressed, I guess.
So no one goes to the insane lengths that I go to then?
Guess like, not.
I've working up an entire history for this particular group of Chaos Warriors.
I go to insane lengths, yeah, but not on this. And not in that style. I've got plans for how I'm actually going to do my my army list for my Skaven. It involves red, blue, anaglyph classes. It's going to... You've seen how much effort I put into the, you know, the draft tournaments, the TTS ones that Chimp and I do. You've seen how much effort I put into the like PowerPoint presentations for those. Like, I'm not a man averse to sinking 20 hours into something that could easily have been done in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Just a question of where to allocate that that sort of sickness. Great. Well, that pretty much leads us perfectly on, just like we planned it, to the question that we've had from a loyal listener. Hello, tiny plastic people. Apologies if you've addressed this before, but my old brain... Fuck me. Apologies if you've addressed this before, but my old brain doesn't retain information. With the recent release of Horus Heresy 2.0, aka Rate My Primarch 2022 edition, there has been a deluge of articles and videos on the internet about how to choose your legion, how to build a decent army, and how to make your army competitive, etc. I don't want to limit my question to the new hotness, so in general, how do each of you go about choosing and building an army? Do you build lore-friendly lists or go for strength on the table? What attracts you to new armies, and what advice would you give for somebody looking to pick up a new army, or maybe even their first army in a game system? Thanks for podding, James, aka Fatang from Discord. Thank you, loyal listener Fatang, who I speak to most days on the internet. Let's start with you, JD. How do you go about building your army?
So it varies by project, but generally I start off with like, which of the units do I think look cool? And then from there I go into, right, what's their deal? Like in the lore, what do they actually do? And if I vibe with that, then I just go in on that. So like, but it, like I said, it depends on army. So my Raven Guard for Heresy is very heavily informed by my interpretation of that particular story. So my Raven Guard army is basically, it's post Istvan Dropsite Massacre. So
yes,
I'm going for no Terminators, no tanks. Very scrappy in terms of what gear they have access to, because they've lost everything on Istvan. Like, especially because I was reading about how the Raven Guard deploy like armored companies and stuff. And unlike every other legion, unlike every other legion, they sort of had a very centralized system for using armor. So armor wasn't assigned to any individual companies or chapters. It was all held in reserve basically until they needed it. So yeah, my thinking for that is like, they've probably lost like basically all of that on Istvan, so they've got nothing left, and they've not really got time in the chaotic events that happen directly after Istvan. They don't really have time to kick their Forge World into gear and mass produce new stuff. So yeah, like for example, my entire access to heavy weapons is mostly wrapped up in veteran squads who get like one missile launcher. Or maybe two missile launches if they're feeling fancy, but that's entirely it. So I want it to feel like, I appreciate this could very well completely screw me in terms of like games that I play, like because people like the cool things like Terminators and tanks, and I don't really have much that can deal with them that well. But I feel like for me, Heresy is much more about the vibes, and I feel like that particular list building choice is going to pay off in that way, in that it feels like you know, this back is running around behind enemy lines resistance movement that's hitting the traitors where they can and then running away, and I feel like that captures that particular legion perfectly. But yeah, like that, it will shock nobody to learn that the way I build armies generally does tend to run around what story can I tell here? Like, what particular part of this narrative can I latch onto and build something out of?
Ah, that makes sense. Tom, how about you?
I think there's always a hook. There's always some single thing that I can lock into and go, I want to do a thing about that. Whether that is a specific narrative. My Imperial Fists were designed around being the Saturnine ambush. Right. So when originally building them, I was basing it on that, and still keep that in mind. My voice is going, excuse me.
Too much pod.
Podded too hard.
Much too young.
Don't know how to sentence that.
it's right. I think it would just be formed into a rap at the beginning or the end of the pod.
Here I was thinking my mounted jokes would end up.
I think
way.
It'd be a combination, right, James?
Thanks, James.
Lovely. What the fuck was it? What the fuck was I talking about?
Saturnine ambush.
Sometimes that hook. Yes. Yeah, so my Imperial Fists were originally based on the Saturnine ambush, and sometimes that hook is a mechanical thing. I can't remember a specific example, but I think the most clearly I've ever felt this was looking at the Idenef Deepkin rules when they first came out, and looking at the rule where you can only be targeted with ranged attacks if you're the closest unit, and thinking, I want to do that. I want to build a thing around that. I want to play a game where that is a puzzle that I am setting my opponent to unpick. And I never actually did get round to doing Deepkin, but that was the clearest I've ever felt about a mechanic that this is the thing I want to do. And yeah, so sometimes it's that. And once it was painting, and I got those models in February, and I've not painted them yet, so maybe that one doesn't connect so strongly. That was my Tau, and I wanted to do them like Simon Stalenhag Tales from the Loop robots. With those bright, very sharp, bright colours with a bit of weathering on them. Very, very stark and just a little bit dirty. I thought that might work really well with Tau.
Description of my hinge profile.
I was going to say, is anyone want to claim that statement? Hashtag me IRL.
Yeah, exactly. Tag yourself.
But yeah, like there's always, it's usually something like that, and then I do a bit of poking around and go, oh, okay, this has other benefits as well. Like, oh, okay, was it? Oh, okay. Tau are going to be really good and interesting to play, so I can get them to paint and also enjoy that.
Cool, Michael. How about you?
I don't think I've really built an army. I've accrued and grown just a mass of Stormcast, which, given that they're military folk, is kind of necessarily an army. But it's collection, rather.
Right.
And in the sense that an army is also what you use to play war games with, really, those are just formed out of it. Like, I've painted specific stuff to go to Brotherhoods because that worked really well. 0-10, come on. but, yeah, I just add stuff to that, and even that wasn't done with any kind of... Maybe because it was my first army, there was no overarching theme to it. There was no particular direction. I just picked up, started with the models I really liked. Didn't paint them for a year because I was terrified of them. So did other models first. Like, even when I love a model, it's not necessarily what I paint next. Like the big dragons and stuff, exceptions to that.
Sometimes it's too scary.
Like the thing that got me in was
you look at the model you love and you think I'm gonna fuck
the things that got me in were the Paladors, the Griff Charger Riders, and I knew that I wanted stuff in place. Like I've been pretty good at not letting myself have stuff because I needed to get good first. I kind of quickly realized that the way to get good was painting the things, and the way to paint things was to paint the things you liked. And
absolutely.
And I'm fortunate in my finances that if I was like, oh, those three weren't that great, I'll just buy another three and paint those. Like I did, that wouldn't be the end of the world. So I've been able to just crack on. I've done that. Like I was only a few months into the hobby when I got the changeling and cut him in half and cut a liberator in half and made Steve the most normal liberator.
Yes.
Which is the changeling mid transforming back.
Such a good model.
Like I'd been doing the hobby for about 6 months, eight months.
Long.
At that point, barely any time. And I was just like,
I
just cracked on with that. And my big models like Krondis, like I had a plan, but just got into. I was like, this is ambitious. But worst comes to worst, you just like repaint it. So yeah, I just add stuff, and I'm in that position where if I want to go to an event, I can pick 2K off the shelf, and I can now do it quite themed because I have best part of 2K of each of the different types of Stormcast. Even like I can do quite specialist stuff, but all my other attempts to do stuff, like I wrote out an ogres list. And I went for like all different sizes on that because I've painted Kragnos, right? He's my only destruction model. He can go in any destruction army, and yet I have no other model I can put him with because I haven't painted a single destruction model.
He is your destruction army.
Yeah, so I wrote out an army to go with him, and it was a bit of everything of different sizes, Noblars up to a Frostlord. Well, I didn't get around to that because I've still got the Skaven I've got some ideas for, but I'm just so lazy. So crushingly lazy. Like when I do get these ideas of like these high concepts, they don't translate into me actually painting any models. So what's the point?
That's not always true.
They translate into me painting a model. And the model goes on the shelf. So
wow, that's a victory in and of itself.
It is, yeah. It just means that, like, when it comes to this, I need to just not delude myself that, like, oh, I love painting this one model. I'm suddenly going to have
2,000 points.
A Tyranid army. It's like, no, you've got a Broodlord. Great. It's a nice Broodlord, but you don't have a Tyranid army, and you probably never will. So don't buy it. Yeah.
That's good advice for the listeners there. Don't buy it.
Is that the note we end on?
Well, I guess I'll briefly go through
Pete.
It was only advice for myself. You'll be fine. You'll go buy.
I mean, yeah, my advice would be very much do buy it because I'm a maximalist with these things. I guess I would say that my how do I choose and build an army ethos is just incredibly variable because there are a few armies that I approach kind of like just a collection where you're constantly putting things in and chipping away at it. Like both of my Horus Heresy armies are like that because I have a lot of both of those now and I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. But they are also both built with a sort of vague setting in mind, like they're supposed to be Siege of Terror, Blood Angels, and Sons of Horus. So, you know, end of the war, a bit scuffed up, you know, a bit scantily equipped at times, maybe. But a lot of my other armies are basically like, I like these models, and I would like to be able to use an army of them at some point. I think a lot of my collections end up falling into the sort of like you've got a tabletop force and then one or two things you can sub in and out of it, that sort of size. And I'm one of those people that would never really considers a collection to be finished at any point because you can always add to it, but that's kind of where a lot of them rest at. And then occasionally I will just think like I'm going to make a list and buy that and nothing else. So I did that with my Ossiarch Bone Reapers army for AOS. I came up with a list that I thought was a good list, like within my own extremely flawed understanding of a good AOS list, but you know, it's Petrifex Elite, so it's hard to be too bad. but yeah, I basically planned out 2,000 points of that, bought it, painted it in a very short span of time because I'm very quick when I want to be, and I've not bought a thing for it since, even after, you know, a book later. So is it a book later? I haven't had a second book yet. Are we still waiting on that?
They got a White Dwarf update, I think.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, years later, I haven't added anything to it because that army to me is like a sort of a project that I very much planned out and executed on. I guess in a more general sense, I would say, you know, because part of Tang's question is like, how do you pick maybe even a first army in a game system? I really would go on something that you mentioned, JD, is like, what models do you like looking at? And if you can think of it in this way, what models do you think you will enjoy painting? Because I think, especially for people who are like brand new to the hobby, sometimes you can get a bit ahead of yourself and go like, well, I've bought a Space Marine army in its entirety, and now I'm looking at all these boxes of unopened, unassembled, unpainted, unsprayed plastic, and I don't know what the hell to do. I think starting with a bit and going on from there is a much better way to approach things. At least for me, it's much harder to like overwhelm yourself, and it also means that if you end up not liking it, you haven't like sunk yourself to the tune of several hundred quid. You know, if you just try one or two boxes out and it turns out not to be for you, that's a much less serious prospect. So
that's good advice for people in the hobby generally, I think. Like that's something that I've trained myself to do now as well, is not go all in straight away.
So I certainly have done that myself as well. Yeah,
when the first Slaanesh battle totem came out, I did buy like basically all the new stuff, so like the Keeper of Secrets, the Fiends, everything like that. I basically bought one of everything, and I bought a big box of Slaves to Darkness to go with them. Back in the day when you could just put Slaves to Darkness out of units straight in without having to have a limit on them. And I think I owned that Keeper of Secrets for about a year and a half before I painted it. And it's a lot. Like I'd never recommend anybody to just buy an army. Because it's just fair enough if you work like that, then fine. But like, I don't think most people really do.
Yeah, I think for most people it'd be better to sort of go in drips and drabs.
Yeah, I mean,
I
had
in manageable chunks.
I had Caradhran thoughts a while ago. Like had the lore and story idea for them, and I was all in on it and really excited. And then I thought, I'm going to buy the Underworld's Caradhran Warband first and paint those and just see how I get on. I started painting one of them and decided that I hated it. Like, because my most hated thing is base coating lead belcher, or base coating silver, basically. Don't know why specifically silver. Gold and bronze I don't have too much of a problem with. But base coating lead belcher and stuff particularly, I really despise. And there's a lot of that to do on those Caradhran. They've got lots of little bits of metal flight suit and, you know, whatever. And yeah, so I'm glad that I didn't go all in and go, oh, I'm going to buy an Ironclad and a bunch of Arcanauts and a bunch of Thunderers. I didn't do that. I just bought, just started off small, realized I didn't like it. I've never gone back. And that's good, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good time for you to find out painting an Underworld's Warband, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
As opposed to what I did with a Caradhran Overlord's army about 3 years ago, which is buy about 2,500 points at once, paint 15 models, and then go, don't want to do this anymore. And then sell it for a fraction of its cost to somebody else. Good job. Right, well, I think that might be it for us.
So don't buy it.
Yeah.
Is in fact the
buy it
the
slowly.
Ending on.
That's what I say. Take your time with it. Tickle it.
Fucking hell.
I was just thinking to myself, oh good, nobody's going to make the joke.
So, let's go through where we can find talk through to our listeners where we can find our esteemed hosts. So, JD, where can we find you online?
I'm on Instagram as @jd.paints.
Michael, where can we find you online?
I'm @rogue_Michael on Twitter and Insta.
And Tom, where can we find you online?
I am Le Swordfish, L-E Swordfish, all one word on Twitter. And on Instagram, I'm the same thing, but it's LE_Swordfish.
Nice. And me, you can find me at Fienya, FIYENYAA. Only on Instagram, because I banned myself from Twitter because it was bad for my mental health.
And ruined a lot of my Twitter fun in the process.
I'm so sorry, but I had to do it for my own good. Tiny Plastic People, check it out at tinyplasticpeople.com. And if you want to email in a question, like loyal listener for Tang, email us at thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.